good afternoon.
So I imagine it's been a pretty intense, I guess, a pretty harrowing week for you and your family.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
What was it like seeing Dylan up there and giving evidence to the Royal Commission?
In the moment when I was watching him speaking in his suit, I was just so proud of him. To be able to stand there and hold his composure and hold himself together like that, you know, while he's speaking about things that have happened to him. I was just feeling a really big sense of pride and, yeah.
Were you surprised by any of what he had to say?
A lot of it, yeah. A lot of it. I mean, all I knew of it was what I'd seen on Four Corners myself. So he'd said things like, you know, about being driven from Alice Springs to Darwin in the back of a car, and things like being starved and refused toilet, you know, being able to go to the toilet and water and all that kind of stuff, which to me is just, it's just unimaginable. I just can't imagine. I'm trying not to sit down and think about, those things.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess it must have been hard for you to hear all of that, knowing that that was your brother who you grew up with.
Yeah, and I guess the only thing, I guess, that kept me from, I guess, losing my cool or getting upset was the fact that he was sitting right there across the room from me, and all of these things that happened to him, and he's standing there, like, with his head held high and still so strong, like, in that. Yeah, that's the only thing to me that was like, you've got nothing to be upset about, you've got nothing to be angry about, this didn't even happen to me.
Have you had a chance to speak to him after he gave his evidence?
Yeah, I did. We went and visited him yesterday, the day after, on Tuesday. We didn't, because on Friday they cut his phone calls, so he had no phone contact with any of his family over the weekend, so before he went to give his evidence, and then when he returned back to the jail after, at the end of the day. So I couldn't exactly speak to him until we went and had our visit, which was a bit... I was scared, to be honest with you. After I left the courthouse on Monday, I was fearing for his life again, because just the simple fact that he was leaving with three of the guards that are involved in his case and, you know, have hurt him in the past and... Yeah.
And how was he after he'd given his evidence, and how was he treated after he'd given his evidence?
He was thanked by the commissioner, you know, for being brave and being able to sit there and speak about everything that's happened. Yeah, he was thanked and given a round of applause for writing his letter and speaking up, you know, and in his closing statement it was hardly about him at all. It was just about the system and the fact that it needs to change, and he knows that what's happened to him has happened already and it can't be changed, but he needs to make sure that through this Royal Commission there's going to be change.
And do you know any more about how he's been received back into detention after really speaking out about a lot of things that he says happened to him?
I mean... Do you mean by the guards or by the...
Yeah, by those. Yeah, that's right.
The way he, I guess, gave it off to me is how he said it to me anyway. Because me and Mum are very concerned for him and the fact that he's in there with the guards. But after he gave evidence, I think he felt very confident in the fact that he's told all the truth that he needs to tell. And now it's up to the commission to now take that into account and cross-examine the perpetrators in this thing, you know, the people who are being held accountable and told that they've done the wrong thing, because that's what happens in the courthouse, you know, and he knows that that's what's going to happen now, and he's confident, I guess, in the fact that that will happen and he shouldn't have to feel scared anymore for that, yeah.
Now, he gave his evidence just a couple of days ago, but since that evidence, he has copped a lot of flack from a lot of people. Yesterday we spoke with former Territory politician Natasha Griggs. She said that she doesn't think he should be a martyr. She said that he took to the stand looking angelic in a suit, and it didn't tell the full story, and it didn't tell the story of his victims. What do you think about comments like that?
Oh, I think the whole, just the way, I didn't even listen to the interview, but the comments, I read some of the comments and just read what she had to say. I couldn't push play on SoundCloud, but just from what I got of it, like the Martha thing and saying, you know, Angelic in a suit, like if that's all she got and she didn't actually listen to him, is just ridiculous. Like, why even speak if you haven't listened to what he said? He never said that he's innocent. He never said that he was angelic. He, you know, he owned his crimes and he presented his own rap sheet to the commissioners. And because he's a juvenile and all of that happened when he was a juvenile, none of that even has to be made public, you know. And for him to now offer that and give that to the commissioners and say, look, I've never once pleaded not guilty. Throughout all of my charges, I've pleaded guilty. And I own that now. I'm an adult and I accept what I've done is wrong. And the only reason he's giving his evidence is so that this doesn't happen to any other young people and he doesn't see any other young lives ruined through the system. And that's it, you know. And there needs to be that line drawn down the middle of his past and his present. He's now a 19-year-old young man that has had to drag himself out of this system and grow up and mature for himself because there was no help there for him, you know.
There are others who are saying that his victims are being forgotten through this and his crimes shouldn't be forgotten, but you think that that's not the case, that he is acknowledging those victims, he is acknowledging those crimes?
Yeah, I mean, he acknowledged them when he went to court and he pleaded guilty. It's as simple as that, you know. He's got a record there that says he went to court and he has some time for those crimes that people are kicking up and saying, you know, jumping up and down about, saying he's forgetting about his victims. No, he's not, because he's not on the run still. He's not, you know, not waiting for a warrant to be, you know, given to him to be arrested. He's done the time for those crimes. So that's irrelevant.
Okay. What comes next for him and what comes next for you as his support family?
I guess just trying to get him out and help him, you know, help him make something of himself now that we know the whole truth, because at the time, you know, when all of this stuff was happening, it's hard to even fathom that the system is letting him down, when for so long we thought that that was the right thing for him and he should be in jail because he had done the wrong thing, you know. And we stood by that as a family. We said, no, you know, you've done the right thing, you've hurt people, this is ultimately what you have to do. You've got to go to jail and pay the price. And that's what we did, and we stood by him through all of that, you know. And now we've seen the other side and actually what was happening inside there, and that it wasn't helping him, it was damaging him more. And I think that that's where, you know, he needs to be handed back and being given that second chance to actually have rehabilitation.
All right. Kira Voller, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this afternoon. I'm sure for you this has been a very intense week. All the best to you, and thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon.
Thank you.